Jacob. It's quite a story, isn't it? We've been following it in the last few weeks. He was a longed-for child. Jacob's parents waited 20 years for him, but he grew up in a divided family, favored by his mother, less popular with his father, resenting his older brother Esau. He takes advantage of Esau's impetuous nature and manages to secure the inheritance rights of the older child, and then cements it by ensuring he gets the blessing which his father intended for Esau, using trickery, deception, and lies, all spurred on by his mother. No wonder his brother wants to kill him. Terrified, he flees for his life, and in fact, he never sees his parents again. He travels back to his ancestral land, and then he works for 14 years as a price for his bride. He's tricked by his uncle into having two brides, one who he loves and the other he doesn't. Having two wives is never a good idea, and the competition and the jealousy between them, not to mention their two maidservants, leads to tension and strife in the domestic arena, resulting in 11 boys and one girl. Prompted by God, he finally plucks up the courage to leave his uncle and head for home. But the underhand manner in which he does this leads to more trouble and bitterness, not to mention conflict with Laban. He finally arrives at the border between the land of his uncle that he's leaving and that of his immediate family, Abraham and Isaac. And at that point, reality catches up with him. He realizes that by entering into Canaan, he has to finally face his brother Esau, not knowing whether the anger and hatred of his brother has subsided or deepened in the intervening years. He sends messengers ahead to test out the land, and they come back with the news that his brother is heading out to meet him along with 400 men. This doesn't sound like a welcome home party. Jacob's worst fears, in his mind at least, were confirmed. His brother is out to kill him. He can't go back to the land of his uncle, but to move forward may well lead to conflict and death. He is between a rock and a hard place. I wonder if you have ever felt like that. When to go back is impossible, but to go forward seems madness. That moment of realization that the truth you have been running away from can no longer be hidden. You have to face it. Your past has finally caught up with you. The thing you've been ignoring or putting in the back cupboard tumbles into the foreground. It may be like Jacob, something you've done, a lie you have told, a person you have hurt. Sometimes it can be a set of feelings that were unbearable and you buried them, hoping never to have to think about them. And then something happens and those feelings, so long buried, tumble out of the cupboard. It can be a very scary place. It was certainly scary for Jacob. Let's take up the story by reading together Genesis chapter 32.
Well, as Helen said, we're going to pick up the story in Genesis 32. If you want to follow it in the Bibles, it's on page 35, if you've got a church Bible. And we're going to pick up the story at verse 7, if you're following it. So in great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and the herds and the camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. Then Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant, I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper, and make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. He spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows and 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. He put them in the care of his servants, each herd by itself, and said to his servants, go ahead of me and keep some space between the herds. He instructed the one in the lead, when my brother Esau meets you and asks, to whom do you belong and where are you going, and who owns all these animals in front of you? Then you are to say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent by to my lord Esau, and he is coming behind us. He also instructed the second and the third and all the others who followed the herds, you are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us. For he thought, I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead. Later when I see him, perhaps he will receive me. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he'd sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, which means face of God, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip.
Eric. Our passage tells us that Jacob was in great fear and distress. He was terrified. You can almost imagine him pacing the ground, frantic with worry, agitated, restless. What shall I do? You can imagine all the eyes of his servants and his family on him, looking to him for direction, perhaps arguing amongst themselves about what they think should be done. It feels a bit to me like Jacob goes into overdrive. He divides all the people and the animals with him into two groups, hoping that one group at least will survive. He then prays, and you can sense the desperation in his prayer. He identifies God as the God of Abraham, that's his grandfather, and Isaac, his father. But he describes himself simply as God's servant. He doesn't seem to have a personal relationship with him. He acknowledges God's kindness and faithfulness and owns the fact that he didn't deserve any of it. He reminds God of his promises and word and claims that promise for himself. He pleads with God to save him. We can learn a lot from his prayer. It's a great model of prayer and something you can explore more in your small groups. But for now, I want to move on. It's interesting that almost as soon as he says amen, in fact, to me, the prayer almost seems to end mid-sentence, Jacob goes into action. He decides to send on gifts for his brother, of goats, of ewes, of rams, of camels, of cows, bulls and donkeys. And he gives his servant very particular instructions about what to say and how to present them to Esau. He then tries to sleep, but again he's restless, and he gets up and he decides to take his immediate family, his wives and his children, across the river. Then he crosses back until finally we read, Jacob was left alone. Alone. Alone with his thoughts and his fears, with his panic and his terror, exhausted with all the anxiety and all the effort of the plans and strategies. Totally alone. In the blackness of the night, Jacob waits alone. You can almost hear God's sigh of relief. I've finally got Jacob alone. At last, he and I can do business. It's as if Jacob has prayed to God a great prayer of gratitude and claiming God's promises, but then he gets so busy trying to fix it, trying to plan what to do, it doesn't sort of seem like he actually listened to what God had to say. I wonder if that rings any bells with you. It's in the silence, in the moment of being alone, that God answers Jacob's prayer. And what is his answer? He sends a man to wrestle with him. Notice it's the man that initiates the wrestling. It's intense, it's physical, it's intimate. You can't wrestle with someone from a distance. It's up close and personal. It's sweaty and messy and dirty, and it lasts several hours. Jacob must have been exhausted. It doesn't seem much of an answer to prayer. And as the day began to dawn, Jacob thought that he was winning. He'd fended off the man. He'd kept his attacker at bay. And then in a moment, in an instant, with the lightest of touches, it tells us, the man wrenched his hip. The man put his hip out of joint. Jacob would have been in agony. That searing pain. Suddenly he was defeated. He could fight no more. But in that instant, Jacob realized this was no ordinary man. This was God. He has no fight left in him. He can no longer struggle or be on the attack. His hip is in agony. He's exhausted, but he can hold on. And he clings to the man, to God, for dear life. I will not let you go unless you bless me. As one commentator put it, you are not leaving. You are not going to go unless you bless me. And Hosea the prophet tells us Jacob struggled with God. He wept and sought favor from him. This was clinging on as if his life depended on it. Another author said this, Jacob was reduced to the place where all he could do was to hold on to the Lord with everything he had. Jacob could not fight anymore, but he could hold on. And then God asks the piercing question, what is your name? This to me is a pivotal moment. God knows Jacob's name. He didn't ask because he wanted to know. But in asking his name, he forced Jacob to face the reality of who he was. I am Jacob. The Amplified Bible puts it this way. In shock realization, whispering, he said, I'm Jacob, the supplanter, the schemer, the trickster, the swindler. It's as if until then, Jacob hadn't really faced up to who he was or what he was responsible for. In that moment, he felt the shame of all that he had done. He thought the enemy he had to face was Esau, but in fact, the real enemy was himself, his own sinful nature, his own self-reliance, and his own self-sufficiency. Jacob has to acknowledge his weakness and his vulnerability, and therefore his total, utter dependence on God. It's not until he's honest with himself and with God about who he is that God then blesses him. And what did that blessing look like? Firstly, God gave him a new name, a new identity, the name Israel, which our passage tells us means you have struggled with God and overcome. In what sense did Jacob overcome or prevail? According to the dictionary, the word prevail means victorious. Jacob acknowledged that he had been conquered by God. He had surrendered to God. And it was only after he came to grips with God and ceased his struggling, realizing he couldn't go on without God, that he received God's blessing. All of his life, Jacob had been struggling with Esau, with Laban, with himself. And yet it was in laying down the struggle, realizing he could no longer struggle, that he found God's peace and blessing. In that sense, I believe Jacob prevailed. Jacob was victorious. That's the paradox of the Christian life, isn't it? As we surrender to God, we receive the strength and power we need to live life to the full. Secondly, I believe the blessing was a new relationship with God himself. Jacob said he saw God face to face. He encountered God in a new way. He found himself in an intimate tussle with God. And in that process, God became his God. The God not just of Abraham, not just of Isaac, but the God of Jacob. Thirdly, Jacob is a changed man. As he goes to meet Esau the next day, humility replaces arrogance. Courage replaces cowardice, and enmity gives way to reconciliation. He receives his brother's blessing. There's so much we can learn here, isn't there? What are your struggles? What are you struggling with? Maybe it's difficult choices around work, career choices, maybe no job, maybe redundancy or retirement. Maybe your struggles are in relationships, a marriage that feels full of arguments or bitterness or boredom, or worried about your children, their education, their friendships, their future path. Perhaps you have worries around illness, waiting for a test result, caring for an elderly relative. For some of us, our struggles are within, aren't they? Feeling a failure, constant anxiety, or battling with depression. Feeling no one really cares or that we don't really belong. And at an even deeper level, often so hidden we don't know it, there can also be a struggle with who God really is. In your heart, do you wonder, does God really care? Is he really interested in my problems? Is he really good all the time? Does he really have power over evil? Is he strong enough to rescue you? The story of Jacob shows us that God hears and answers our prayers, but we may not get the answer we want or expect. When Jacob prayed, God showed up, not as a comforter, or with reassuring words, but as a wrestler. Before God deals with our struggles, he deals with us. We have to face up to ourselves. So what do you need to face up to? What is your name? God calls us to be honest with ourselves and with him, to own our weaknesses, our vulnerabilities, our desire to be in control, to do things our way. We have to confess our sin before him. Maybe our stubbornness, our lack of generosity, our pride. Maybe our inability to control our desires. We have to face up to the doubts we have about who God really is. So I ask you again, what is your name? What do you need to confess to God in this moment? Being honest with ourselves and with God brings us to that place of utter dependence. Acknowledging that we can't do it ourselves, that we are totally, utterly, and always dependent on Him. All we can do is cling onto Him. There's an old hymn, isn't there? Nothing in my hand I bring, simply to thy cross I cling. But in that place of clinging on, God gives us a new name. Through Jesus, because of his great love for us, we have a new name. Paul, writing in 1 Corinthians, tells us, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The Apostle John reminds us, how great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. Brothers and sisters, we have to be honest before God about who we are in our sin and our failures, but God never leaves us there. Through Jesus' death and resurrection, we are redeemed. We are children of God. We are beloved, a new creation. Will you have the courage to be alone with God? To come before him and let him touch you? I have to tell you, it will involve pain and suffering. You may walk with a limp, but you will have a deep experience of God that brings blessing. You will have a new name, a name that will be written forever in God's book, the Lamb's Book of Life. A few months ago, I came across a worship song which has comforted, encouraged, and yet challenged me every time I hear it. It reminds me how I need God every moment of every day, when I struggle, when I face temptation, when I feel alone, when I doubt. This song brings me back to God each time. As we listen to it now, let's draw near to God and hear what he wants to say to us. The words will be coming up, I hope, on the screen. And here's the song.
Grace is